The Beat on the Street is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, campus and community radio.
Hello, I'm Stuart Nullman. This is number 0856, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0856. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Mark Morton, who is the author of The Headmasters. It's his science fiction debut, for which he is getting plenty of accolades for.
Most recently, and maybe most importantly, it was named the winner of the Arlene Barlin Award for Science Fiction and Fantasy. I knew I had written a good book, and I think probably every author hopes that's the case. So on the one hand, I wasn't surprised that other people, you know, the jurors liked it. On the other hand, it really just depends on who the jurors are, because all four of the other nominees for that category wrote really good books. When I teach creative writing to students, I always say two things are needed. You have to be a good writer and you have to be lucky.
And we have another sci-fi writer. Pat Daly is the author of The Spark Chronicles, a near future science fiction series. As a former NASA engineer and Air Force pilot, what impact does his former career have on his science fiction writing?
It's hugely impactful because as a lifelong reader of science fiction, it always bothers me when people get science or technology wrong. Now, it's one thing if the book or whatever I'm reading has been overcome by the current state of science. I'm perfectly willing to accept that. Where I struggle is when people just completely disregard the science. And I'm fine with that too, but let's not call it science fiction. Let's call it fantasy.
Science writer Andrew Bozekis, the night sky guy, is back for his first visit of the new year, taking stock on what to look forward to in 2026. And yes, one of the things we'll be talking about still is Bennu, who may have some of the answers about the very beginning of life in our solar system.
What this gum-like material is saying to us, it's hinting at a very complex kind of prebiotic chemistry that it maybe existed throughout the solar system. While we're not talking about that we found life on Bennu, it does kind of reinforce the idea that a lot of the essential chemical ingredients for life were really widespread in the early solar system when Bennu first formed.
And of course, there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, dad joke theater, morning shower thoughts, something new called Sir Dudley's Poetry Corner, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0856, is a regular contributor to this show, Stuart Nullman, whom you hear every 3 weeks with another edition of Book Banter. Thank you very much, Stuart, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. The U.S. Naval Forces Central Command in Bahrain sent two letters to Toronto-based Bonji Bon sex store after adult items were intercepted by customs officials. Co-founder Grace Bennett received the warnings over 1 month last summer when packages were returned to her warehouse. The Pentagon letter stated, "During security screening by Bahrain Customs, pornographic materials and/or devices were identified in a package addressed to you, and warned, pornographic materials or devices are not allowed in the Kingdom of Bahrain." Now, to be clear, Bonji Bon didn't just send items to the Kingdom of Bahrain. They were ordered by someone and then forwarded to the military base there. said Bennett.
We just thought the whole thing was quite funny from so many angles, especially, once again, my business partner is a vet, and how serious it all was. And additionally, we're just a business in Canada trying to get everyone their vibrators in a safe and, like, consensual way.
Bennett noted that the customers were reimbursed. The Pentagon declined to comment. Meanwhile, what exactly did Bennett do with the official embossed terse letter from the U.S. government?
Not every day you get a letter as a Canadian from the Department of Defense for the United States. So, of course, we had to frame it in a rhinestone frame. Like, it's just, I don't know if there was any other thing we could have done. I think it's quite funny. They wanted me to let people know to not order butt plugs if you're in Bahrain from us as a U.S. soldier. So I made a social media video about it, and it did quite well. There's many layers of hilarity to this that, like, we can all just poke fun, and like the situation is quite funny. While at the same time, I genuinely want everyone, I'm sad that they didn't get their order.
Well, one side benefit from all of this, it's not just automobiles, aluminum, Canadian oil, or just about everything else that is now tariffed by the United States. It's butt plugs.
We ship worldwide. We ship to the States quite a bit. And so specifically this year has definitely been challenging shipping to the States as a Canadian business that sells primarily goods made in China with the tariffs from the U.S.
What? We can't make them here? Well, at least we still make hockey pucks. Anyway, now because of this worldwide attention, Bungie Bond's business is booming. Christopher Millette of Martin County, Kentucky, faces auto theft charges after taking his ex-girlfriend's vehicle while she delivered their child at a Pikeville hospital on January the 2nd. Police say Millette arrived to witness the birth, but was asked to wait in the car's passenger seat due to hospital visitation rules. Security footage revealed Millette exited the passenger seat, moved to the driver's seat, and drove away with the vehicle. When his ex-girlfriend called asking about her car's location, Millette reportedly told her it was none of her business where her vehicle was before ending the call. Authorities arrested Millette the following day and charged him with auto theft. I think I know why he's her ex. I also am going out on a limb to say that I think we already know that, even at this early date, he won't be father of the year. And finally, in this section of Stuffall News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuffall program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, people are prop betting on the return of Jesus Christ in high numbers. Last year, there were $2.5 million in bets on the Messiah making a comeback. Religious-based bets date back to the 17th century, but the payout this year would be huge. There is currently a 2% chance, according to Polymarket, an American cryptocurrency-based prediction market headquartered in Manhattan, and that means for every dollar you bet on no, Jesus will not be coming back this year, you would win 0.027 cents. So you'd have to bet $4 in order to win 1 cent. But if you bet yes and Jesus does appear on earth, you'd win $50 for every dollar you bet. Of course, you probably have bigger issues than the $50 you've won if Jesus is walking the earth.
South Park Elementary presents The Birth of Jesus.
You know, I do like to occasionally bet, and I do play the lotteries, but I question the people who are taking these bets. They must be, oh, I don't know, the devil's advocate?
Let me give you a little inside information about God. God likes to watch. He's a prankster.
Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuffall program, shall we? Mark Morton is back on the program. Last summer, we had him on talking about the re-release of his book, Cupboard Love, A Dictionary of Culinary Curiosities. Mark mostly writes nonfiction books, but 2 years ago, we had him on talking about his science fiction debut called The Headmasters. The book has done very well, so we thought we'd catch up with Mark to find out just how well it's doing. Mark joins us from Kitchener, Ontario via riverside.com. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very, very much for talking to us once again, especially about a book that we've already talked about. But
yeah.
You have done so well with this book. Tell us what's happened with the book since its initial release.
Well, sort of things big and small, you know, on sites like Goodreads and, you know, the Amazon.ca and .com review sites. It's been getting really, really good reviews, like averaging 4.5 to 4.8 or so, which I'm really pleased about. It's been getting some really great reviews in media, like Canadian newspapers, a couple of American newspapers, I think. And most recently, and maybe most importantly, it was named the winner of the Arlene Barlin Award for Science Fiction and Fantasy. And that's the national award for that category, science fiction and fantasy, in Canada.
Did any of that success surprise you?
Well, I'm pleased with my book. You know, I knew I had written a good book, and I think probably every author hopes that's the case. So on the one hand, I wasn't surprised that other people, you know, the jurors liked it. On the other hand, it really just depends on who the jurors are, because all four of the other nominees for that category wrote really good books. And I always tell, like when I teach creative writing to students, I always say two things are needed. You have to be a good writer and you have to be lucky. And sometimes we can make our luck to some extent. But I feel both... like gratified at, I think, having my book recognized as being a good book, a good science fiction book. But I also feel lucky that the particular jurors on the jury this time around thought my book was the best. In terms of the impact that it's had on other media, I guess where I noticed that is with... social media platforms. Like, I'm really noticing a sudden uptick in the number of people who are coming to my website and who are finding me on Facebook and sending me emails and things like that. So that's great. I mean, on the other hand, it means there's more to keep up with and less time for me to work on current writing projects. But, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Since you've written so much nonfiction in the past, was writing fiction kind of a relief or a release for you?
I would say it was a relief in this sense. Like, I wrote all four of my nonfiction books, starting in 1996 and going up to about 2006, I guess, those 10 years. And then my wife and I adopted four older kids, so we had to put our writing careers on hold. She's also a writer. She's a poet. And so for 15 years, we didn't do any writing, really. It was only in the past couple of years that we've returned to that. And I kind of felt like maybe everybody is like this, but as you get older, you can feel your memory beginning to change. You know, the more often you go into rooms and you go, what in the world did I come in here for? Or trying to remember names of our dogs and things like that. So I realized that I probably didn't have the kind of analytic memory anymore that I needed to write those nonfiction books, because those nonfiction books were very sort of fact heavy, a lot of information in them. And so it felt like a relief that I wasn't going to put myself into that position of trying to write that kind of nonfiction book again. And it was also maybe not a relief, but it just felt like, you know, when you step into water, let's say a lake on a beach, and the water is just sort of the perfect temperature. It kind of felt like that, because I felt like, fiction. I feel like I've been kind of craving writing fiction for a long time. So it felt very natural to step into the waters of fiction.
Well, now that you've experienced it, did you feel, or do you now feel, that you should have done something in fiction a long time ago? Or do you feel that it was just the right time to do that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. My wife and I sometimes talk about that, for both of us. I think where I've settled on this is, if I had started writing fiction you know, 15 or 20 years ago, I don't doubt that I would have written some novels or collections of short stories and things like that. But I just don't think they would be as good, or maybe they wouldn't have the depth that I think my fiction has now. You know, those subsequent years, especially years spent raising kids, adopted kids that had PTSD and various other challenges, I think they expanded my sense of what it means to be a person, you know, how we should interact with each other, all kinds of things like that. So I like to think that those years of raising our kids, which, you know, were wonderful years in and of themselves, but I think they were also very beneficial to me in becoming a better writer of fiction.
Do you feel that living experiences enhances your fiction writing?
It certainly does for, I certainly feel that for me. I mean, not everybody is like that. I can think of lots of authors of science fiction and other genres who began to write, you know, very early in their 20s and were very successful, and their books continue to be seen as really great books. But for me, I think I really needed those years of raising kids to help me become a, I hope I can say a person with more depth than I was before.
When I last spoke to you, or actually 2 years ago when we talked about the Headmasters, when I talked to you then, you said that you had already written a second fiction novel called The Changelings, but it hadn't received a publisher yet. What's the status of that one?
Yeah, what I did is I sent it out to some agents, didn't get any bites from them, and so I thought, oh, maybe I should take another look at this. So I actually didn't look at it for a couple of months, and then I picked it up again and read it, perhaps with more objectivity, and I rewrote the first third of it or so. Then I kind of got distracted into beginning to write a third novel. Because I find that the kind of mental headspace that it takes to be emailing agents or publishers, doing sort of the quote-unquote business work of writing, is very different from the headspace that's needed to write fiction. And so I've never been able to combine them at the same time. So that second novel, I'm just beginning again to look for an agent or a publisher. I think I've got another leg up this time because my friend, I think I can call him my friend, I've only known him for a couple of years now, but Robert Sawyer, who's, you know, recognized as sort of the dean of science fiction in Canada, he read the manuscript just recently, just a couple of weeks ago, of my second novel, my second still unpublished novel. He really, really liked it, and he wrote me a really enthusiastic blurb for it. So I think I'll include that blurb when I approach agents and book publishers, and I think that will give me a leg up. I certainly hope so.
Doesn't the Headmasters, the success of the Headmasters, kind of plow the path ahead of you for you?
Yes, it does. But then again, publishing now is so different than it was 30 years ago. You know, with the advent, well, I'll just name two things. One is the advent fairly recently, like the past 5 years or so, of greater ease in self-publishing through platforms like Amazon Kindles, what's it called? Amazon Direct, I think. So anybody can upload their manuscript and have it turned into an ebook and have it sold on Amazon. Which is great and not so great in different ways. And then more recently, you know, the advent of AI. You know, there's all kinds of people who are trying to produce books using AI and putting them on Amazon and trying to sell them. Sometimes they're even more nefarious, like they'll put into AI something like, write a collection of short stories similar to so-and-so, a particular author. And then they will publish it on Amazon, and they will put the author's, the real author's name on the book, but they'll change it slightly. Maybe they'll change it from Smith to Smythe or something like that. So it's easy for people to mistake, you know, the genuine article from these false gods, so to speak. Anyways, I guess what I'm saying is that it's hard to get noticed in this current market. Because of AI and self-publishing and things like that, it's still pretty easy, or it's still much easier with regard to nonfiction. If you write a nonfiction book and you've got a very specified market, you can much more easily find a publisher.
Well, congratulations. I mean, I don't need to congratulate you because you had success with this book. But congratulations on the success of this book.
Thank you.
2 years running, and we're still talking about it. The book is called The Headmasters. It's written by Mark Morton. And thank you once again, Mark, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks so much, Peter. Really enjoyed it.
Mark Morton, author of The Headmasters. You can go to our website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0856, and you'll find the link to Mark's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. Also, I referenced the last time we talked about The Headmasters with Mark. That was 2 years ago. That was in March of 2024 on show number 0760. You can go back and listen to that. And the re-release of his nonfiction book, Cupboard Love, A Dictionary of Culinary Curiosities, was what we talked about on show number 0829 back in July of last year. You can check that out, too. Links for both of those episodes will be on this week's show page on the website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
And now, Dad Joke Theater.
What type of bear is toothless? A gummy bear.
Join us again for another Stuff File program, Dad Joke Theater.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on the Stuff File program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
I'm standing and I'm fired up for Canada. Hey, this is Sean Majumder, and I am so excited to have repatriated, self-deported from America, back to Canada. This is where I want to raise my girls. This is where I want to do comedy and tell Canadian stories. Even saying the word Canada gets me fired up. Shop as if your country depends on it. Keep your money in Canada for Canada.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll have a morning shower thought. Plus, there is indeed an idiot of the day coming your way. We also have something new, which is Sir Dudley's Poetry Corner. And of course, we have much more in Stuff File News right here, right now. A bank in Woodsfield, Ohio, called the Monroe County Sheriff's Office to report that a drive-up customer sent a baggie containing an unknown substance through the pneumatic tube system, then drove off. Deputies say the baggie contained a crystal-like substance consistent with methamphetamine. Apparently, the teller also got enough information to identify the customer. Deputies caught up with 46-year-old Jason Smith a few miles away. A police canine alerted them to other alleged drugs and drug-related materials in Smith's truck. He was arrested. Said Sheriff Derek Norman, illegal drugs don't belong in bank drive-thrus, but they can be turned in at the sheriff's office. No charges, no handcuffs, just help. We'd much rather safely take them off the street than see another unexpected deposit. Yeah, well, cops give a lot more interest to such things than banks. A lawsuit was just filed on December the 9th for something that happened earlier in the year in March. An Ocala, Florida man is suing Outback Steakhouse after a trip to a restaurant's bathroom took an unfortunate turn. The lawsuit says the man, identified as Michael Green, visited one of the chain's restaurants in Ocala back on March 26th. At the time, Green went to go use the restroom, but while he was seated on the toilet in the handicap stall, the toilet suddenly shattered and collapsed beneath him. As a result, the lawsuit argues, Green suffered severe bodily injury. Now, Green is accusing the restaurant of negligence and failing to maintain the toilet properly. The lawsuit seeks over $50,000 in damages.
Outback's going full on Aussie, starting at a down under price of just $16.99.
Perhaps during this delicate lawsuit, they should refrain from using the term down under. Yeah. We're just about to get to our second guest here on the Stuff File program. But before we do that, no doubt you've heard my lifelong manservant, Sir Dudley Piddley Haversham Sedgwick Smythe, on the show. Well, he's been clamoring for more airtime, so to placate his testy mood, we've initiated a poetry corner for him on the show. So without further ado, here is the first installment.
The Stuff File presents Sir Dudley Piddley Haversham Sedgwick Smythe's Poetry Corner.
There once was a pharaoh named Tut, whose sarcophagus wasn't quite shut. Wrapped up like a mummy, his skin became gummy, and you couldn't tell his face from his butt.
Heaven help us all. By the way, this segment, along with Dad Joke Theater and Morning Shower Thoughts, will now all be on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and our new account on TikTok. You've all been warned. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Pat Daly is a former NASA engineer and Air Force pilot. He's also the author of The Spark Chronicles, which is a near-future science fiction series of novels. Pat joins us from Houston, Texas, via Riverside.com. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Peter. How are you today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. When did you decide to start writing these novels, and was it always your intention that it was going to be a series?
I developed the intention to write these probably 2017, 2018. I had no intention of them being a series. It didn't occur to me until I wrote the last sentence on the last page of Spark, the first book, that I decided, well, there's way more to this story that I haven't talked about. So that kind of launched the second, third, and fourth.
When someone starts to write, they don't know necessarily if they're going to get a publisher or how successful the book is. So were you hoping upon hope that, as you said, when you got to the end of the first story, that there would be an audience for a subsequent series of books?
Oh, I was. I was exceptionally hopeful. And then those hopes were crushed mercilessly as I spent the next 6 months querying, trying to find a publisher from one of the big publishing houses. And I ended up finding eventually a smaller publishing company, and it was a great fit.
Now, I said in the introduction that it's set in the near future. So how far ahead are we in the Spark Chronicles?
I'd say based on the state of technology today, we are within 10 years of being able to do virtually everything I talk about in the series.
And why did you set it, again, 10 years ahead? Why not in the present or in the distant future?
Well, I eliminated the present because I wanted to make it as much hard sci-fi as I could, so be faithful to science as we know it. And then why not way into the future? I thought I could have a more